her completely besotted. It was sweet to see, and warmed her heart. Steve was exactly the kind of man Sidney had always hoped Sabrina would meet and fall in love with. Serious, solid, as hard-working as she was, and he adored her. She had high hopes for Sophie as well, but at 25 she still seemed too young to settle down. She just wished she'd stop taking in wounded birds like Grayson and find someone more fun and who would take care of her. Sophie arrived next and was alone. "Where's Grayson?" her mother asked her. "Is he sick?" Sophie hesitated for a minute before she answered and looked awkward. "He's not coming. We decided to call it a day a couple of weeks ago. He's a wonderful person, but his issues make everything really difficult." They all knew it was true, and though Sidney didn't say it, she was relieved. Now Sophie could find someone less troubled to spend time with. Her relationship with Grayson had been hard work, even though he was a good person. "I think you made the right decision," she said gently. "It was more his decision than mine," she admitted. Sabrina had known, but they hadn't told their mother yet. Sophie wanted to be sure first that they would stick with it, but she realized now, too, that it was the right thing. Grayson seemed relieved when she talked to him. He didn't want the pressure of a relationship. He said it was too much for him, even if he loved her, which he said he did. She loved him, too, but he had become a heavy burden to carry, with all his problems and quirks and scars. The two girls chatted easily with Bob and Steve, and Ed arrived a few minutes later with Kevin. Sidney was impressed by how stylish Kevin was. He looked like a model in a slim black suit with a black sweater and boots.
"Did you dress him?"
she whispered to Ed when he visited her in the kitchen area where she was busy. Bob was pouring them all wine. Ed laughed at her question.
"No, he cleans up pretty good on his own, and looks like a grown-up. He used to model."
"He's gorgeous," Sidney said, impressed.
They made a good-looking couple, and in proper clothes, the 8 years between them were no longer noticeable. The other two men had dressed more traditionally, in blazers and gray flannel slacks. Sidney thought Bob looked particularly handsome and very British. He had a noticeably European style she loved. They sat down at the table at 6:30. Sidney had covered her design table with a white linen cloth she'd ordered online with matching napkins. No one noticed the mismatched plates that had come with the apartment, with the abundance of food on them. Sabrina had lent her some bowls and platters the week before. They all complimented the food, and the turkey was delicious and not dry. She'd even made gravy for it. The dinner was her masterpiece, and she'd put a lot of effort into it.
"I stand corrected," Bob said in awe. "You're a fantastic cook."
She knew she wasn't, but was pleased to hear it. The dinner was excellent, and she could see he was having a good time. He and Sabrina had engaged in a lively conversation, and they were all being warm and caring with Sophie, who looked a little forlorn without Grayson. He had been her pet project for a long time, but a difficult one at best. Sidney thought her life would be better without him, but she was sure Sophie would miss him, and knew she had cared about him and felt sorry for him. His early years had damaged him so badly, which was sad. Bob kept the wine flowing generously throughout dinner, and after Sidney brought out the pies and ice cream and Bob poured another round of wine, Sabrina looked around the small group nervously and exchanged a look with Steve. Bob spotted the silent glance between them and guessed what was coming. Sidney was too busy dishing out the ice cream on everyone's pie to notice, until Sabrina said they had an announcement to make. And Sidney stopped what she was doing, rooted to the spot, and sat down.
"We're getting married," Sabrina blurted out, grinning at all of them, as Sidney stared at her. She knew she should have expected it, but she hadn't. No one in their world seemed to get married anymore. They just lived together or had babies unmarried.
This was her fondest hope for her daughter, a wonderful husband to love and care for her. Sabrina looked ecstatic, and Steve kissed her and beamed like a big, happy boy, and then turned apologetically to his future mother-in-law. "I know I should have asked you first," he said in a low voice, looking contrite. "It just kind of slipped out a few days ago at an engagement party we went to. Are you okay with it?" he asked Sydney, worried, and she gave him a big hug. It would have been nice to be asked or forewarned, but she doubted that many people did that anymore, and she thought they were perfect for each other. "I wholeheartedly approve. You both have my blessing," she said with damp eyes, looking very moved. "You make it worthwhile getting arrested and nearly going to prison, if Sabrina gets a terrific husband out of it," she said, and meant it, and everyone at the table laughed and congratulated them. Sabrina was 28 years old, financially successful, and had a booming career, and so did he. He was 10 years older than she was, and everything about their union seemed right to Sydney and to Bob when they talked about it later. Sabrina wanted to get married in June and said they wanted a small wedding. It brought home to Sydney again the difficulties of her financial situation, until a year and a half before she could have given her an elaborate reception and Andrew would have wanted to throw a lavish event for her, probably at their home. Now it would be a challenge to do anything except a simple, very restrained gathering on a tiny budget. It made Sydney sad to think she would be cheating her daughter of her dream wedding, and she still owed her money from the court case. All her life, and as a little girl, Sabrina had talked about wanting a big formal wedding, and now she didn't have that option. And Sydney didn't want Sabrina paying for her own wedding. It was a challenge she would have to figure out in the coming months. Bob could see that she was troubled about something, but couldn't figure out what, since she liked the groom so much, and meant to ask her about it when they were alone. For the rest of dinner, the conversation was all about the young couple and their plans. It was all very new, and the wedding was still 7 months away, so nothing had been organized yet. "We're doing the wedding dress, of course," Ed announced immediately, and Sabrina accepted with delight. "Will you have bridesmaids?" he asked her, and she said she hadn't decided yet, but she thought she only wanted Sophie as her maid of honor and no other attendants. It was Sophie who had always said she wanted a simple wedding or none at all. This was new for Sabrina, who had changed her tune radically, and Sydney suspected it was out of deference to her. "We'll do her dress, too," Ed said about Sophie, "and your mother's." He smiled at Sydney. "Oh, I love weddings," he crowed with glee, clapping his hands, and they all laughed. "When can we start? I wanted to do a bride in our first collection, but we didn't have time. This is going to be fabulous." He had designed bridal gowns at Dior, but hadn't had the chance to since. The decibel level at the table rose, and Bob brought out 2 bottles of champagne he had bought for him in Sydney, and the remainder of the evening turned into a celebration. "Who's going to walk you down the aisle?" Ed asked her, obsessed with every aspect of the wedding. He said he had a fantastic new florist. He was suggesting venues, and Sabrina looked uncertain how to answer his question about who would walk her down the aisle. Now that Andrew was gone, there were no other important men in Sabrina's life except her future husband. Her own father was long gone, and she had no brother or male relatives of any kind. "My mom, I guess," Sabrina said hesitantly. She was the only person she could think of with an adult role in her life, and Sydney looked deeply touched by the suggestion. "I don't know if that will look right," Ed said, concerned with the fashion statement and the visual of 2 women walking down the aisle together.
"I'd be happy to, if you'd like me to," Bob said, in a clear, calm voice,
and Sabrina was startled, but not averse to it, as Sydney's eyes filled with tears again. Life had a way of giving them what they needed, even if from unexpected sources. She had no way of knowing if she and Bob would even be dating 7 months from now, although she hoped so. But she was very moved by the offer, and Sabrina was too. He was a kind man. "That might be very nice," Sabrina said quietly. "Thank you, Bob."
"I like the way that looks much better," Ed said as the self-appointed wedding planner, and they all laughed again.
"And I like small weddings. You never get to talk to anyone at big weddings. It's just a giant cattle show with everyone milling around. What kind of cake? What about chocolate with vanilla icing? They had a fabulous one at Jack and Tom's wedding. I can ask them who their baker was."
He was on a roll, and Sidney leaned over and kissed her business partner on the cheek and couldn't resist teasing him.
"You make a fantastic mother of the bride and wedding planner. I think we should start doing brides."
"I'd love it," he said honestly. "But no one would take us seriously. I'm not Vera Wang," he said. And everyone laughed. Sabrina had added an element of joy to Thanksgiving with her announcement, and Steve smiled for the rest of the night. He looked happy and proud. They all had a little too much to drink once Bob served the champagne to celebrate the engagement, but they all left in high spirits, and Sidney held her daughter tight for a minute and told her how happy she was for her. And she gave Steve a big hug when they left. They were taking Sophie with them and were going to drop her off at home.
"Well, what a special evening that turned out to be," Bob said, impressed. They'd all had a wonderful time. "It would be hard to top that. I picked the right year to start celebrating Thanksgiving with you."
He kissed her and searched her eyes for a minute.
"You're pleased about it."
He thought she was, but still felt that something was bothering her.
"I am. I couldn't be happier. He's a terrific guy, and they love each other. You never know which marriages will work and which won't, but I think they'll be a great couple."
"You looked worried for a minute at one point. Well, sad."
He wasn't sure which, and she hesitated, not sure if she should share her most private thoughts with him to that degree, and she didn't want him to think she wanted his help.
"I can't give her the kind of wedding she's always wanted, even if she says she wants a small one now. She's wanted a big, elaborate wedding since she was a little girl. But I can't do that now, and I don't want her paying for it herself. I think she's keeping it small to be considerate of me."
She felt like a failure again, not being able to make her daughter's dreams come true.
"May I help you?"
he asked gently, and she shook her head.
"I can't let you do that. It wouldn't be right, but thank you."
She smiled gratefully at him.
"And thank you, too, for offering to walk her down the aisle. That was incredibly sweet of you."
She was very moved by his kindness and generosity.
"I don't want to overstep any boundaries, but I'll do whatever you allow and she wants," he said. And she could see that he meant it. "Maybe she's changed her mind about a big wedding," he said thoughtfully.
But either way, there was no other choice, and even a small wedding would be a stretch. It would be a big help that Ed would make their dresses. Beautiful wedding gowns, and especially the kind Sabrina would want, cost a fortune. Bob pulled Sidney into his arms then, and held her for a long moment. He knew she was too proper and too proud to accept any financial help from him, but he would have helped gladly. Just knowing that was a gift to her, and having him at her side at her daughter's wedding, big or small, was going to be a joyous event. They cleaned up the debris from dinner the next day, and were both startled by how much wine they'd consumed, but it had been a celebration, and no one had gotten sloppy or visibly drunk. The evening had been a big success. They had the apartment neat again by lunchtime. Bob was always a big help. The snow had continued all day and had brought the city to a dead stop with 2 feet of it on the ground,
and they were happy to be indoors reading and watching movies and playing games. They lived on the leftovers from dinner for 3 days. Ed sent her emails all weekend with possible wedding dress designs, which made her smile. He was ecstatic about the wedding and doing Sabrina's wedding gown. On Monday, Sydney got back to work on the collection, and Bob flew to Hong Kong. He sent Sabrina and Steve a beautiful silver frame from Tiffany as an engagement present before he left town. He was coming back to New York in a month, right after Christmas with his children, to spend New Year's with Sydney, and he hoped to stay longer that time. Sydney had a serious conversation with Sabrina on Monday about the wedding, and apologized for not being able to give her a huge event as she had always said she wanted. "I don't want that anymore, Mom." She sounded sincere about it. "I've grown up. I don't want all that pomp and ceremony and show-off stuff. I just want you and Sophie, our close friends, and Steve's family. That's all we need. Please don't worry about it." Sydney felt a weight lift off her shoulders when Sabrina said it. She even felt happier about the wedding after that. Sydney was working on Monday after the Thanksgiving weekend when she got an email from her realtor in Paris. She'd had an offer for the apartment, and she said that her tenant was ready to vacate in the next month anyway, by the end of the year. The potential buyer wanted a quick sale for a respectable amount. It wasn't a fortune, but the price was fair. The buyer was Italian and wanted a pied-à-terre in Paris, and he wanted to take possession of it rapidly with a fast closing. The realtor said that if she accepted the offer, she could have the money in early January. And if she agreed to the amount, they could sign a promesse de vente right away, which she knew was a promise to sell, which established the amount of purchase and the terms and was a binding contract. Instead of writing back, Sydney called her to see if there was any possibility for negotiation to raise the price a little. "I can try, but it's a good offer," she told her, and Sydney knew it was. "It never hurts to try." The realtor agreed to contact the buyer and called her back an hour later. He'd come up another $50,000, which satisfied Sydney. "I'll take it," she said to the realtor, with a silent prayer of thanks. Now she could pay Sabrina back, pay Steve's bill, and host an intimate, beautiful wedding for her daughter with all the gracious touches that would make it memorable for them, but not over the top or showy. "Congratulations, madame," the realtor said to her, sounding pleased herself. It was a charming apartment, but small and old-fashioned and hadn't been easy to sell. "Thank you, God," Sydney said as she hung up the phone. The timing was perfect, and her financial needs had been met, and she would have enough to live on modestly for quite some time. Everything was falling into place at last. She had faced the worst and come through it. Chapter 17. Sydney called Sabrina first to tell her about the sale of the Paris apartment because she was the most directly affected by it. Sydney was so relieved to be able to tell her she could pay her back now for Steve's fees and the $5,000 she'd paid to the bail bondsman in cash. The deed to her apartment had been returned by the bail bondsman as soon as Sydney was sentenced, and now she could pay Steve in full, too. He'd been patient about it, but it had weighed heavily on her, especially with what she owed Sabrina. In January, with the sale of the apartment, she would be able to pay it all. "You don't need to worry about it, Mom," Sabrina reassured her. "I've been fine." "Well, I haven't been. I've been worried sick about taking money from you. That's not the way it's supposed to be." And it had never been before, but getting arrested had turned her whole world upside down. The sale of the Paris apartment would set it to rights again, or start to, and put things back in the order they were meant to be, with a mother helping her daughter, not the reverse. She never wanted to be a burden on her children again. "Are you okay about the apartment, Mom?" Sabrina knew how much she loved it and how sad she must be to give it up. She was, But other priorities were more pressing now, and the sale of the apartment would help her achieve them.
I'm sad. I can't pretend that I'm not. But I'm glad in a way, too. It was a place for Andrew and me. And now I can pay you back, which is more important to me. It was upsetting me terribly that I couldn't till now. And I can give you a beautiful wedding, however you want it to be. I want you to have your dream wedding with Steve, so start thinking about where you want to do it.
She sounded jubilant when she said it. It had made her heart ache thinking that she couldn't do all that she wanted for her when Sabrina had announced their engagement on Thanksgiving.
I don't need a big wedding, she insisted again, graciously. And I can chip in, too. You shouldn't have to pay for everything.
She didn't want her mother to spend everything she had for her wedding, or too much, and she had told Steve she didn't need anything elaborate and expensive, and neither did he. They were going to save money for a house, and with their combined salaries, they could buy a nice one, or an apartment in the city until they had children. And they were in no hurry to have kids yet. Sabrina wanted to concentrate solely on her career for several more years. She wasn't ready to give that up at 28.
I'm your mother, and I love you, Sidney insisted, and I'm paying for the wedding. You're not. So start thinking. We can do something really lovely, maybe in a garden somewhere outside the city. People rent their homes for that.
They could have done it in Connecticut, of course, in the old days, but there was no point thinking about that now. She didn't want to look to the past. She wanted to be happy for Sabrina and stay focused on the present. The past was dangerous ground for her, a minefield of memories that would blow her to bits and break her heart if she let it. She didn't want to go there anymore. The present was more important now, and moving forward. She still missed Andrew at times, but he had left her such dire problems to deal with that she had to switch her focus rapidly from grief to survival. Sabrina promised to think about a location for the wedding, and she thanked her mother for her generosity. Sidney called Bob when he arrived in Hong Kong and told him about the Paris apartment. He was quiet for a minute, knowing that it was a double-edged sword for her, and bittersweet.
Will you miss it terribly?
He knew how much the Paris apartment had meant to her. She'd told him about it, and he could tell.
Yes, no, she said honestly. I love it, but I couldn't go back there now. It's part of another life, and it's giving me what I need now. I'm grateful for that. It'll give me a cushion to live on so things aren't so tight. I can pay back Sabrina for Steve's legal fees, and I can give her a lovely wedding.
She sounded immensely relieved about that.
She's being very sensible about it. She even offered to help, but I won't let her. So, to answer your question, I'm grateful for what selling the apartment will do for me, so I'm a lot less upset than I would have been otherwise.
She was being matter-of-fact about it, and he respected her for it. He admired her courage, her spunk, and her style. She had an extraordinary ability to bounce back from events that would have crushed others. They talked about it for a while longer, and he said he'd love to go to Paris with her one day, when she was no longer wearing her anklet, as he put it. And then she went back to work. She thought about the Paris apartment a few times that night, but reminded herself each time of the benefits she was deriving from the sale, which cheered her up. The realtor had emailed her the papers to sign on Tuesday. She had already signed them, scanned them, and emailed them back to her. All she wanted now was the money and to get on with her life. She had enough to keep her occupied without wallowing in the past. But 3 days later, she felt like she'd been hit by a wrecking ball when she read that Russians had bought their house in Connecticut. She stared at the article and read it again and again as tears rolled down her cheeks. The twins had gotten their asking price, but whatever the Russians had paid, They had gotten a piece of her heart. It was one thing to lose a pied-à-terre in Paris that had been a toy for them and a luxury, but selling the house that had been their home with all of her most beloved belongings in it tore her heart out. She sat there and cried for an hour as she looked out the window thinking about it. And this time, Veronica didn't call her. She never did anymore after Sidney told her not to, but their beloved home going to strangers was almost too much, and even worse, right on the heels of the Paris apartment. Now, everything was gone. Only 18 months after Andrew's death, and so much of what they'd loved. No one could take the memories from her, but they had taken everything else. Bob could hear that something was off when he called her that night, and at first she insisted that nothing was wrong when he asked. She didn't want to talk about it, and didn't think she could without crying.
"Tell me, Sidney, what happened?"
He said it so gently that she started crying and couldn't stop, and then told him that the house had been sold, with all their memories and all their history, and everything that had been stolen from her by her stepdaughters. Bob felt terrible listening to her, and didn't know what to say. He wanted to put his arms around her, and hated that he wasn't with her to do it. They had to content themselves with words for now, and the fact that they loved each other.
"I can't even imagine how hard this must be," he said tenderly. It was almost like a fire, or a flood, or a hurricane that had swept everything away. "I'm so sorry they took it all away from you. It was so wrong of them."
And the part her husband had played wasn't right either, but Bob didn't say that to her. There was no point blaming Andrew now. He just wanted to console her.
"It's easy for me to say," he said apologetically, "but you just have to go on and make a good new life."
She knew it too, and was doing her best to do so.
"I've been trying," she said, crying harder, "and then I got arrested, and I wound up stuck in this stupid apartment."
She sounded like a little kid. And he smiled and loved her all the more.
"I'll be there soon, in the stupid apartment with you," he said in a loving tone, and she laughed.
She hadn't lost her sense of humor, but occasionally it all got to her, and the sale of the Connecticut house was a hard blow that struck at her heart. It was truly gone now and would belong to someone else. She wasn't sure if that was better or worse than the twins owning it and Kelly living there. They talked for a while after that, and Sidney sounded calmer and had regained her composure by the time they hung up.
"I'm sorry I got upset," she said to him sheepishly. "Don't be ridiculous. That's what I'm here for. I'd have been in a straitjacket by now after all you've been through. Women are much stronger about these things than men. I stayed in bed for a week when Bridget left, and we didn't even like each other by then," he said, and made her smile. "I'd be upset about the house, too," he said seriously.
And it was hard having it happen at Christmas, when memories and losses were always more acute. She thought about it again late that night, looking out the window, and she missed Andrew fiercely for the first time in a while. She wasn't angry at him anymore. She just wished that things were different, and he was still alive. But she knew that she was lucky to have Bob, even if their love was new and they didn't have much history yet. She was sorry they couldn't spend Christmas together, but they both needed to be with their children, and lived worlds apart. They still didn't know how they would manage it in the future. Neither of them could commute between Hong Kong and New York all the time, although some people did. And Bob was coming to see her regularly. But as long as she was still under house arrest, she couldn't travel, too, to lighten the load on him. There was nothing they could do about it. She was grateful that he came to see her as often as he did. Coming to spend New Year's Eve with her would be her best Christmas gift from him. Sophie visited her a lot on weekends now that she didn't have a boyfriend. Sydney ordered dinner for them, and they watched movies together. She still missed Grayson, but knew the breakup was right. Sabrina was busy with work, Steve, and their plans for the future, although she hadn't organized the wedding yet. She hadn't had time. Sydney had managed to do some Christmas shopping online. It felt strange shopping that way, but it was all she could manage, unable to get out of the apartment. The girls and Steve were planning to have Christmas Eve dinner with her and Kevin and Ed. And the day after Christmas, Steve was taking Sabrina to Florida to meet his parents, and after that, they were going to spend the weekend alone in Palm Beach for New Year's Eve. Sophie was going skiing in Vermont with friends. It all sounded like a nice break to Sydney, whose horizons were limited now by a two-room apartment and a window that looked out on the street. But she was happy they were willing to spend Christmas with her, and she enjoyed the time she was spending with Sophie before she started dating again. Sydney and Ed sent a lot of designs back and forth to each other in the weeks before Christmas. They were going to be closed between Christmas and New Year's, and after that they'd have 6 weeks till their show. And she couldn't be there to help this time. Coincidentally, it was going to be on Valentine's Day, which seemed a little corny to her. And the time was coming closer. They had most of the designs done and the samples in production, except for a few where, as usual, they were waiting from fabrics from abroad that had been delayed. But there was plenty of time to catch up, and Ed was still sending her sketches of wedding gowns for Sabrina whenever he had time. It was a happy event to look forward to. They'd had too many sad ones in recent years, but finally the tides had turned. She was working on some drawings when Steve called her 3 days before Christmas and chatted with her for a few minutes while she wondered why he'd called, and then he asked if he could come to see her. "Is anything wrong?" she asked nervously. He never came to see her alone, and her court case was closed, as long as she didn't leave the apartment until the end of March, which was still 3 months away. "Not at all," he answered her. "I just thought I'd drop by if you're not too busy working. I have a Christmas present for you, and I wanted to bring it over myself." She was confused by what he said. "Aren't you spending Christmas Eve with us, Steve?" "Of course, but I thought this might be useful for you for the holidays." She wondered if he was bringing her a Christmas tree. She had already ordered one that would be delivered the next day. She wasn't much in the Christmas spirit yet. The sale of the Connecticut house was still weighing on her. "What's a good time?" he asked, persistent about dropping off his mysterious gift. "Well, I won't be out when you come," she said, and laughed. "I hope not. How's 4 o'clock? She would be working, but could take a break any time. She couldn't imagine what it was. He arrived promptly at the dot of 4, and she stopped sketching and buzzed him in. She glanced in the mirror and saw that her hair was a mess and she had no makeup on. She hadn't bothered with how she looked. She usually didn't when she worked from home. He was wearing a business suit and a heavy coat and looked like he'd been to court that day, which was the case. He took off his coat and sat down on the couch with her. They chatted for a few minutes about nothing in particular, and she was more mystified than ever as to why he was there. And then, finally, he got to the point. "I wanted to bring you up to date on Paul Zeller, and I thought I'd do it in person." She nodded, not sure why it mattered anymore. "He had a hearing this week, and they offered him a deal. Apparently, they've pulled a lot of information from his computers, and he's been buying stolen goods for years. This wasn't new. He's always managed to do it under the radar without pinning it on someone else. But you came along at the right time, pure snow, and I guess he couldn't resist using you and letting you take the fall if something went wrong. You were a great cover for him this time." "And they're letting him go free?" She anticipated what he was going to say, and Steve shook his head. "Hardly. He could get 20 or 25 years. They spelled it out to him. Money laundering, tax evasion, dealing in stolen goods.
And it's hard to trace, but there is some belief that money from counterfeit and stolen fashion items pays for terrorism in some parts of the world. The feds take this very seriously. They shut down his business after he sold it. The government is going to take what they consider their due, and I was told his ex-wife will get the rest. So, he's got nothing left. The U.S. attorney wanted him to get 20 years or more, but he's got an outstanding lawyer who schmoozed the U.S. attorney and everyone from here to the pearly gates, so they offered him a damn good deal. 10 years in prison, 5 on probation, and his lawyer somehow managed to get it down to 7 and 5. He's damn lucky they offered him that deal, or he'd have been in prison for a hell of a long time. Zeller wanted to turn the deal down, but his lawyer wouldn't let him. They would have crucified him at trial, particularly if they put you on the stand to tell how you got prosecuted because of him. It would also make the U.S. Attorney's Office look bad for being tough on you and making you an example. They tried to pressure you for information they now realize you never had. So, Zeller took the deal, kicking and screaming all the way. He signed it yesterday, and they're shipping him off to the federal penitentiary today or tomorrow. No bail in the meantime. He's done. She sat thinking about it for a few minutes, and then nodded and looked at Steve. She suddenly remembered that Paul had a son in St. Louis who was a pediatrician, and she wondered how he'd reacted to his father going to prison, and she felt bad for him. She thought of all the grief and trauma Paul Zeller had caused her when she had been innocent all along and they hadn't believed her because Paul had lied. "Thank you for telling me," she said quietly. "Is that the Christmas present you meant?" She was curious and needed time to absorb what he'd told her about Paul Zeller. At least now it was over, and they weren't after her anymore. "It's part of it," Steve said, referring to his gift, as he reached into his pocket, pulled out a small scissor, and held it up. "What's that for?" She looked puzzled. "Well, as your lawyer, I managed to keep you out of prison, but you got stuck in here for 6 months," he said, glancing around at the now vastly cluttered apartment, crowded with computer equipment and her giant screen to meet with Ed and follow the business on a daily basis. "And if that son of a bitch can get 7 years instead of 25, I figured they owe you one. I met with a judge this morning. You're done, Sidney. They reduced it to 3 months with credit for time served, so it's over. They deactivated your anklet at 4 p.m. today, and they've reduced probation to a year with permission to travel because of your work. The judge said you can keep your passport, just send your probation officer an email when you leave and get back, and as long as you have no further problems or convictions, the judge said he'd talk to us in 6 months or a year about terminating probation and expunging your record." She was staring at him in disbelief. "They were overzealous with you, and they knew it. Now they're trying to get out of it as gracefully as they can."
"You did all that today?"
"I did. You're a free woman, Sidney. Now give me your leg, and let's get that goddamn thing off, and I'll return it to the DA's office." He held out his hand as she looked at him in amazement, lifted her ankle, and he cut the plastic band that held it in place till it fell away, and he smiled at her. "Merry Christmas, Sidney," he said, as tears poured down her face, and she hugged him and gazed around the room as though seeing it for the first time.
"Oh, my God. I'm free. I'm free. Can I go out?"
Like an animal that had been chained up for 3 months, it was as though she had forgotten what to do when someone took off the chain. "You can do anything you want. You're free," he repeated.
"It's over." "Oh, my God. Oh, my God," she said, chortling with delight and clapping her hands.
Ed called her just then, and she didn't pick up, which he knew meant she was either in the bathroom, the tub, or asleep. But she wasn't ready to talk to anyone. She just wanted to savor the moment with Steve. Do the girls know? He shook his head. I thought you should hear it first. You're a miracle worker. Thank you, she said, and hugged him again, and he got up to leave. Wait, I'll go out with you, she said excitedly. I'll get my coat. She reached into the closet and haphazardly grabbed an old fur and put it on. She felt a little crazy, with messy hair, a pair of ballerina flats, and an old mink coat. It's freezing out there, he warned her, but she was smiling and giddy and almost looked drunk, she was so excited. I don't care if I freeze to death. I haven't had fresh air in 3 months. Literally to the day. I'll call the girls when I get back, she said, sounding distracted. Don't forget your keys, he reminded her. She grabbed them off a table near the door where Bob had left them the last time he was there. She put them in her pocket and shut the door behind them, and a minute later they were on the street. She glanced around her at the traffic and the people, the tall buildings, the dogs being walked, and people carrying Christmas trees home, and listened to the horns blaring. She looked as though she had landed in heaven and couldn't believe her good luck. She hugged him again, and he grinned at her. In Steve's opinion, she deserved every break she could get from now on. "Be careful crossing the street," he shouted after her as she walked away, looking dazed, and she turned and waved with a big grin on her face. "I love you. Merry Christmas," she called out to him. And then she just kept walking with a huge smile. She walked 20 blocks, heading toward downtown, and then she strolled back, smiling at people, relishing every smell and color and face and sound and light. She loved the noise and seeing everyone in a rush to go somewhere. She was going to tell her children, but she had decided not to tell Bob. She was going to surprise him when he came for New Year's Eve. She was a free woman again, and just glad she was alive. Chapter 18. When Sydney got home from her walk, she called both of her daughters and told them what had happened, and gave Steve all the credit for it. She thought he was a magician to have gotten her released 3 months early. The prospect of getting her record expunged, even of a misdemeanor, was good news, too. The girls were ecstatic for her. She told them she wanted to change the venue for Christmas Eve. She wanted to take everyone to the plaza for dinner. It would be wonderful to get out and treat them all to a nice dinner in a restaurant for a change. Even ordinary activities were a gift now. She called Bob then because she could see that he had called her 3 times while she was out, and he was worried when she answered. "Are you okay? I'm so sorry. I was sleeping." She didn't want to tell him. She wanted to surprise him when he arrived. It was only 5 days away, if she could hold out, but it was hard not to say anything to him. She got up early the next morning and dressed for work. She hadn't told Ed either, and she walked into his office casually, wearing gray wool slacks and a gray sweater, and spoke to him as though she'd never left. He stared at her as though he'd seen a ghost.
"Sydney, what are you doing here?"
He was afraid she had broken the rules and just left her apartment and gone out. He was relieved when she told him what Steve had accomplished.
"Oh, my God,"
he said, and ran around his desk to hug her, and he kept hugging her. He was so excited. Everyone in the office was thrilled. He took her out to lunch, and she told him about Christmas dinner at the plaza. Every day was a celebration now. It felt like a miracle to her that she was free. He startled her with a question over lunch.
"My mother throws a charity event in Hong Kong every year to benefit breast cancer research. It's a big deal to her. Her mother and sister died of it. 2,000 people attend, and they raise a lot of money. They always have some special event or happening to make it more exciting."
He He looked slightly embarrassed to be asking her.
She wants to know if we'd send the collection over after Fashion Week. They'd pay for transportation and insurance, and they'll pay to hire the models. I didn't know how you feel about it. To be honest, it's a pain in the ass and a lot of work. I thought you wouldn't be out of your apartment by then, and I didn't want to do it alone. But now that you're free, what do you think? It's good publicity and for a good cause, but we don't have to if you don't want to. I can tell her no. I already told her I didn't think we could if you weren't there too.
Sydney didn't hesitate for a second after she'd listened.
It's a very good cause and good publicity for us, even if it's in Hong Kong, and she's your mother. If it weren't for them, we wouldn't have a business, she reminded him.
True, he said, thinking about it, and his mother had been gracious enough not to point that out.
They're talking about March 1st. The timing could work. We'll have the collection here for 2 weeks after the show to take orders, or 10 days at least, and then we'll ship it to Hong Kong. I can take Kevin to help, and we can hire people there and use local models.
He had already thought about the logistics, but hadn't wanted to do it without Sydney.
So, what do you think?
I say yes, Sydney said firmly, smiling at him. She was in love with the world now that she was out of her apartment.
She's going to love you forever.
He was smiling at her. It was great to see her back at work, even though they had covered the 3 months remarkably well, better than they'd hoped.
I'll send her an email. She'll be thrilled. And it'll be fun to be in Hong Kong with you again, he said, and then he laughed. And you can meet Bob's kids while you're there.
She looked horrified at the prospect. Forget it. Cancel the event, she teased him.
You'll like them, I promise. That's not the issue. They'll probably hate me.
Why should they? They're all adults. It doesn't always make a difference.
He must be ecstatic that you're a free woman now.
He doesn't know, she said conspiratorially. I want to surprise him when he comes next week.
Ed smiled at the idea. He's going to be one very happy guy, he said. And she grinned broadly.
I hope so. She was a happy woman, too.
The six of them had dinner at the plaza at her invitation on Christmas Eve. Ed and Kevin, Steve and Sabrina, Sophie and Sydney. It was a beautiful meal and a festive evening. They toasted Sydney's freedom with champagne and admired the engagement ring Steve had given Sabrina earlier that day. It sparkled on her finger. Sydney went to midnight mass at St. Ignatius on Park Avenue on her own after the meal. It was a beautiful service. She went to see the tree at Rockefeller Center afterward and stood looking at it with awe, and then she walked all the way home. She walked everywhere now. It felt so incredibly good to be back in the world. She took nothing for granted and enjoyed it all. She had lit a candle for Andrew at church, thinking about their life together and how much everything had changed. It was almost as though she'd been a different person then, one she had been just for him, and he had taken that person with him, or she had died with him. Now she was designing again, working, and part owner in a business thanks to Ed. She had survived losing their home, being dead broke, giving up the apartment she loved in Paris, being arrested and going to jail, however briefly. She had been stripped of everything she'd based her identity on, and discovered that she was still a whole person, that she still believed in the same things and had the same values. The things that had meant so much to her when they were married meant less to her now. And having lost them, she had found herself and was stronger than she'd ever been before. She had always thought it would kill her to lose Andrew, but it hadn't. She was sad about him,
and she still missed him at times. But he had died, and she had survived, and what was left of her, what she had become after all the losses, belonged to her and to Bob now. She had discovered herself after Andrew died. She had become a butterfly with strong wings, and Andrew was the cocoon she had shed in order to fly. Bob's secretary had sent Sidney his itinerary by email, as she always did, so she would know his flight number if he was delayed. Sidney had spoken to her on the phone a few times, and she seemed like a nice woman. Sidney made note of his flight number and arrival time, and hired a town car to take her to the airport. She could afford a few more luxuries now, with her salary and the money that would come from the Paris apartment sale in January. Her finances were no longer as terrifyingly tight as they'd been at first, after Andrew died. There was no traffic on the way to the airport. It was 3 days after Christmas, and a lot of people weren't working. There was no snow on the ground, and she arrived at the airport half an hour early and wandered around waiting for him. He had no idea she'd be there. She had managed to keep the secret, although it had been agonizing to do so, but she loved the idea of surprising him with good news for a change. She saw from the big board listing arrivals that his plane was on the ground on its way to the gate, and then it said that the passengers were in customs. She stood just to the side of the doors he would come through, so she would see him before he saw her. He was one of the first passengers out, since he always traveled first class, and he moved quickly toward the terminal exit, pulling his bag on wheels. He was expecting a car and driver to meet him, which she had canceled, since she had hired one herself. She followed him for a few feet, and then walked right up behind him and tapped him on the shoulder. He turned to see who it was, and stopped in his tracks without saying a word. Like Ed, for an instant, he was afraid she'd escaped from the apartment, but she put her arms around him and kissed him as he held her in his arms. "It's okay," she said softly. "I'm free. They let me go." She'd seen the worry in his eyes. He kissed her again then, and they stood for a long time in the airport with people walking around them and smiling. And then he looked at her intently. "What happened? Why didn't you tell me? When?" They started walking toward the exit, and she told him the whole story, about Zeller pleading guilty and Steve talking to the U.S. attorney and the judge. "And they'll expunge my record in 6 months or a year if I don't get arrested again," she said as though it was a normal occurrence, and he laughed. "I think you can manage that, don't you?" She nodded, and they settled into the back of the car and rode into the city. But he had an idea as soon as he walked into the apartment and looked at Sidney. The place looked a shambles now. All the computer equipment and screens were in the way. The coffee machine wasn't working, and they were coming to get the big screen and office equipment the day after New Year's. It made them both feel claustrophobic now being there. She wanted a new apartment, but hadn't had time yet to do anything about it in the short time she'd been free.
"Let's get out of here," he said as he opened his computer. "Let's go someplace hot and sunny. How does St. Bart sound?"
He had barely taken his coat off and was already looking up the hotel he preferred there. He knew they could have a villa with their own pool. Sidney sat and smiled at him when he called them. They had a villa available, and he made reservations for the next day. It sounded like a dream to her. They lay in bed talking that night, wide awake. She had packed, and he said he'd buy what he needed there at the local stores, since he had only brought clothes for New York, and she told him she was coming to Hong Kong in March.
"You have been busy,"
he laughed and looked pleased.
"We're doing a fashion show for a big benefit Mrs. Chin does every year. We'll take the whole collection there after Fashion Week. It should be fun," she said, and he smiled.
"It will be fun having you in Hong Kong. Actually,
It'll be fantastic.
It was his fondest wish come true to have her in Hong Kong with him.
How long will you stay?
A few days, a week, as long as we need to put on the benefit.
Would you stay an extra week, just for us?
He asked her seriously, and she nodded. And then he told her about Christmas with his children. They had all come home and had spent a wonderful week together, before they went off with friends to do their own thing, and he had left for New York. He said they were curious about her, and he hadn't told them that she was incarcerated in her apartment, and didn't intend to. They didn't need to know. They fell asleep that night in each other's arms, and they couldn't wait to leave for St. Bart's the next day. They got up early the next morning and left for the airport. She had sent Ed a text telling him she was going away and knew he'd be fine with it. They flew to St. Martin and switched to a tiny plane to get to St. Bart's. The plane made her nervous, but the flight was short, and it was like being in heaven when they got to the hotel. The villa was fabulous, the location amazing, and having their own pool was a divine luxury. She had never felt so spoiled, even on trips with Andrew. They dined in their room on some nights and went to local restaurants on others. They swam naked in their pool and explored the shops and the port. It felt like a honeymoon and a reward for her 3-month house arrest, all at the same time. They extended their stay, with Ed's blessing, and spent a week there and hated to go back to New York. It was the most perfect vacation she'd ever been on.
First of many, I hope, he said, when she thanked him profusely on the flight home.
He had to leave for London the next day for a board meeting, but he was coming back for their show during Fashion Week, and then she would be going to Hong Kong for the breast cancer benefit. He had already bought a table for 10 and wanted to invite friends so she could meet them. She would be busy backstage for most of the evening, but she could come and sit with them when the fashion show was over. They had one night together in New York before he left. She was still floating on a cloud from their vacation, and so was he. And he loved knowing that she would be coming to Hong Kong soon. They talked about it that night until they fell asleep, and she was half asleep when he left for the airport at 6 o'clock the next morning. He kissed her. And then he was gone. When she got to the office that morning, she knew that the month ahead would be frantic. They had to finish the collection, put on the show, pack it up, go to Hong Kong, and start on the new collection. And before things got too crazy, she wanted to find a new apartment, another furnished one, nothing elaborate or too expensive, but bigger than where she was. The one she was in felt like a jail cell to her now. She couldn't wait to move. She found one the following weekend. It was a furnished commercial rental, like a hotel suite, but it was big enough and nicer than the one she was giving up. She didn't want the expense of decorating or buying furniture, so she was satisfied with furnished rentals for the time being, until she felt financially stable again. They looked impersonal, but it didn't matter to her. Sophie helped her move. It was a relief when she got the money from Paris. She could pay Sabrina off at last, and Steve, and put the rest in the bank. It was the most money she had seen in almost 2 years, and she felt secure for the first time in a long time. They were both working on their shows when Sabrina called her on the weekend to tell her that she and Steve had just found the location they wanted for their wedding reception. It was an English club with wood paneling and fireplaces. It had elegant rooms, a library, and a beautiful garden, and looked like a home, which it had once been. It was formal, traditional, and serious, and suited them. The club rented it out for weddings, and the price seemed reasonable to both of them when Sabrina and Sydney went to look at it. Sabrina and Steve were definite that they only wanted 100 people at the wedding. They wanted it to be intimate, traditional, and discreet. They loved that the club had an old-fashioned feel to it.
Only Sophie was disappointed that they didn't want to do it somewhere funkier and more fun, which would have been more her own style than her older sister's. Sophie was trying to talk Sabrina into letting her wear hot pink as the maid of honor instead of a pale blush